All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us today. I really hope you're having a great day out there. Today is Monday, October 15th, 2012. We're currently broadcasting worldwide from Southern California, so thank you so much for joining us. Currently, we're doing about 3 shows a week on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. This is episode number 22, so you could find it at extremehealthradio.com/22. And I'm really excited about today's guest, Ramil Nagel. We'll be introducing him in just a moment. Let me just talk a little bit about our upcoming show schedule. I'll tell you about the next 3 guests we have. Excuse me. The next guest, I should say, is Dr. David Steenblok on Wednesday on the 17th. And he's doing a lot of great work with ozone therapies, chelation therapies, IV blood nutrient therapies, all kinds of work with cancer, strokes, Parkinson's disease. So tune into that show if you can. That's going to be a really, really great show. Then we've got Marty Gallagher on Friday. He's going to be talking about fitness and exercise, kind of educating us on how all of his training methods work. And then we've got Magda Havas, who is a researcher and author, I believe, into the area of electromagnetic radiation. So that's going to be an interesting show, to say the least. I just want to let you know that today's show, we've been advertising this product quite a bit. It's brought to you by the Vitamix Blender. And if you're in the market for a Vitamix Blender, please consider buying it through us, and we'll get a little commission, and that will be that will help our efforts as well. You can check that out at extremehealthradio.com/Vitamix. Those things are absolutely incredible. I highly encourage you to get one. Today's guest is Ramil Nagel, and he's an internationally recognized author, writer, and speaker on the subject of health. And his background includes a bachelor's degree from the University of California, and he has extensive training as an awareness facilitator and as an avid yoga practitioner. And he discovered the lost cure for tooth cavities when searching for the cause and solution of his daughter's tooth decay. And he's now helping to create a world free of dental disease. So thank you so much, Rami, for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
I've been thumbing through your book, and it's been quite fascinating, to say the least. So you actually got started with tooth decay and cavities from your daughter.
That's right. When she was a little over the age of 1, we noticed a little white spot on her tooth, and then we kept an eye on it. Didn't really know much about what that meant. Maybe that's a little cavity. Mm-hmm. And then it became a brown spot, and then that tooth crumbled apart maybe when she was about 1.5 years. So as parents, we were very concerned, and we called around the dentist to see what treatments they had, and it didn't sound right for treatments for little kids. And wow. And of course, we got the normal recommendation, don't breastfeed and silly things like that.
Right. And at that time, were you nutritionally aware? I'm sure you were. But were you, you know, as aware to know that things like, you know, not breastfeeding would not be good for your daughter?
Well, we're definitely, I thought I was eating healthy. We were eating organic food, and she was breastfeeding, and we didn't give her any processed sugar or flour. So I thought we were doing a good job with her diet.
Wow. So do you think it was more a result of her teeth having those problems? Do you think it was more a result of things that you were giving her or things you weren't giving her?
That's a good question. After doing a lot of research, the real issue has to do with that. And this is a very important thing that most people in our culture don't know. Mm-hmm. The health of our children begins before conception, and it has to do with the nutrient and biochemical balance of the parents. Mm-hmm. So my partner was a vegetarian mostly, and I was eating, although both of us were eating organic foods, we were eating a lot of sugar, just organic sugar, but lots of sweet kind of foods, and mm-hmm. Not enough protein and fat, just a lot of carbs, and that were not high quality. And so my partner was probably low on calcium or low on vitamin D. Mm-hmm. And so during preconception and pregnancy and then after birth, my daughter was deficient on calcium and probably other minerals, and her system also probably didn't absorb that as well. Mm-hmm. And then she was getting a lot of breast milk, and the breast milk was probably low on calcium or other minerals. Mm-hmm. And that sort of set the stage for tooth cavities. A large percentage of children are born with teeth that aren't perfectly formed. If you look at them under a microscope, you could see little imperfections, and the imperfect teeth decay much quicker than perfect teeth. So when you have that matrix set up of weakness or deficiency, then what she eats matters a lot more.
So do you think that, let's say, you know, you were talking about preconception and things like that. Let's say our ancestors, let's say they were meant to eat one thing, but they were eating something else. And I mean, there's a lot of debate about what they should have been eating. But let's say they were eating one thing, but they should have been eating something else. So their, you could say their genetics were weakened to some degree. So let's say if that were the case, do you think it's possible? How much do you think it's possible to undo that for a couple years if you really prepare for child and try to eat right? Do you think it's possible to sort of unwind your genetic sins, I should say, dietary sins?
It's overall, it's pretty amazing what we can do. I think different parents will be different, have different levels of success depending on how many generations of modern foods they have and how far they go in towards improving their health, like how much are they exercising, what particular food they're eating. But I've seen amazing things, even just the difference between my two daughters, where the second daughter, we are eating much better before conception, although our systems weren't totally healthy. We were eating a lot of the right foods, and her head is bigger, and her body proportions are completely different. Her energy level is different. Her immunity to illness is extremely high. She's pretty much, other than having eaten one or two bad things, almost never been sick, and she's 4.5 years old.
Wow.
And she sleeps well, she eats well, and kind of has a very strong, even constitution, like her body looks strong.
Wow. So now, how much do you think the diet is a factor for the father versus the mother during pregnancy and maybe preconception as well? In other words,
diet's a huge factor. There's two main, I relate illnesses to two main things. It's slightly off the topic of tooth decay, but there's either illness from deficiency or toxins, so illness from not enough or illness from poison and toxins. And the father before conception makes a huge, huge impact. And Weston Price showed that in some of the studies he presents in his book, where a vitamin deficient father produced birth defects with a healthy mother with dogs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if even one of the parents is really healthy and vibrant and eating well, and even if they're not eating well, even if they ate well in the past and have a good constitution, like a lot of people whose parents are from other countries have that, the child is just unbelievably much healthier, more robust, and more immune to disease.
Yeah, the reason why I ask is because a lot of people think that, you know, the diet is only important for the mother, and, you know, the father can sort of get away with whatever he, you know, he wants to eat.
Yeah, not only what he wants to eat, but in particular, how much toxins are in his body is very important. If he's drinking a lot of alcohol or other substances near the time of conception, it makes an unbelievable difference because that snapshot in time becomes half of the child. And I bring this information forward in my other book, Healing Our Children.
Interesting. So do you sometimes feel like you just want to shake the world and say, listen, these tooth problems are so much bigger than anyone ever even realizes? Do you ever just want to, I mean, I'm sure you want people to wake up and understand the level to which this, you know, teeth issues, you know, affect our health.
Well, I think it's just a really good point to, I would kind of reframe it a little bit. The first health problem people have, or an indication that there's an imbalance in their body, shows up in their teeth or in their gums, depending on their individual biochemical makeup. And if we took that opportunity to go, hey, this is a warning sign that something's out of balance, and let's look at what that imbalance is and let's fix it, rather than get a dental treatment, blame the balance on bacteria, get a dental treatment, and then pretend like everything's okay. If we did that, there would be an enormous opportunity for people to be healthier.
Right, right. So do you think that there's a correct diet? Because I know you went through a bit of a change in your dietary protocols over the years. Do you think there's a right diet for all people, or do you think that each culture, you know, could have like an ancestral diet kind of a thing?
Both.
Okay.
And it's funny because I do read up on different advice materials from different groups, like the, you know, the paleo kind of thing, or mm-hmm. so-called the paleo people or low-carb people mm-hmm. are very popular. There's two things. One is that our ancestors evolved, our bodies have evolved, like skin color, eye color, height, possibly different enzymes or different nutrient requirements evolved from a specific environment. So a simple example for that is the tribal, like the Maasai or the other groups that have a lot of dairy, mm-hmm. they're huge. Like everyone is well over 6 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Even people in Germany are quite large compared to people in other countries because they eat so much dairy. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot of calcium, and over generations, their bodies adapt to a high calcium diet, and they get bigger bones. Whereas people in other countries that don't have dairy product that might have a low calcium diet, say groups in the Amazon rainforest or some Asian countries, mm-hmm. the people will be really tiny, mm-hmm. and their bodies have adapted to a low calcium diet, so their bones don't get as big.
Mm. It's interesting, yeah, because, you know, a few years back, I was reading the China study, and I think that back when I was eating more raw vegan style, and he was mentioning something about the five countries that have that consume the largest amounts of milk, and I'm not sure if he made a distinction in that book about raw milk, grass-fed milk, and all that kind of stuff, but he said the countries with the highest consumption of milk also have the highest incidence of osteoporosis. Do you think he was making an error there if he didn't make the distinction, or what do you think was going on with people that say that kind of stuff?
It's hard to say because osteoporosis happens because of the calcium phosphorus metabolism gets out of balance. So that could be trace minerals, or more simply, it could be just not having enough calcium. Mm-hmm. And yes, when you ask the previous question, is there a diet that's right for everyone? There is a general answer, which is that a diet where the food is grown and processed with care mm-hmm. is a diet that's healthy. And when you industrialize the food, whether it's industrialized flour or industrialized sugar or industrialized milk, it makes people sick. So if there is a higher rate of osteoporosis in dairy-consuming countries, then it's because of the industrialized milk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating. So what were you saying a second ago about the calcium, phosphorus, and what was the other thing that had to be in balance?
I said trace minerals. But
okay.
So what tooth decay and gum disease on a biochemical level are an imbalance of your blood level of calcium and phosphorus.
Okay.
And that can happen for several reasons. The simple reason and the simple solution I present in the Cure Tooth Decay book, which is we don't get enough. We don't get enough calcium. We don't get enough phosphorus. And we don't have the vitamin activators that let our body utilize those minerals.
Mm-hmm.
That's the simple way to go for now. Although I'm researching into sort of being a little more specific on how people can get their body into balance. Most diseases, if you analyze the person's blood, you'll see that they're out of balance in calcium and phosphorus. So osteoporosis, arthritis, heart disease, this sort of mineral balance in the blood is a sign or a symptom of a disease state. So that's why if someone goes to the dentist and they have a cavity or they have receding gums, their their calcium and phosphorus is out of balance, and that's a sign that their body chemistry is out of balance, that their glands aren't functioning properly, that their hormones aren't working correctly. Their body is not functioning, and that the sooner you catch it, the easier it is to correct.
Mm.
Now, what throws off that metabolism? What makes calcium or phosphorus out of balance in your blood? The main thing is sugar. When you eat sugar, your body will release calcium, usually, but it could also release phosphorus to create. Sugar actually pulls calcium out of your bones, so it gives your body a feeling of enough calcium in the blood. Hmm. So people's sugar addictions might be related to not having enough calcium in their diet.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to ask you, too, because about, you know, why people don't have enough calcium. Let's say they are eating foods that have calcium and phosphorus in it. I was going to ask you about the relation to, for people to be able to absorb, you know, some people have they've damaged their bodies so much, they're not able to absorb minerals. And I guess that could be a factor as well.
Yeah. And when you get to that point where, and I'll be specific, when people's bodies are damaged, I was specifically focused on the liver.
Okay.
The liver is the ruler of digestion.
Now, I thought it was the colon and the stomach and...
Well, you can aim for those. There's the whole gut and psychology thing that focuses on the colon, but it's really about the liver. Mm-hmm. Now, if you help your colon out, your liver is going to get a little relief and function better. And the liver is also controlling how much bile is in the gut and how much acidity is in the stomach.
So if you go to the dentist and let's say someone just goes there and the doctor or the dentist says, you've got, you know, two or three cavities here. Typically, I haven't actually been to the dentist in quite a long time. Do they want to fill you, you know, do a filling right there, or do they want to reschedule you? Because, if they want to do a filling right there, in my mind, I'd want to take at least some time and think about that.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, before even getting to how do you deal with that, probably about half, although there's not good data on this, mm-hmm. half dentists will prescribe unnecessary treatments. So if you haven't been to the dentist in a while and you went to a regular dentist, there's a chance, I would say 50%, that you would be prescribed treatments that you don't even need.
Wow.
And here's a simple reason why. A lot of tiny cavities, they come and go based on what you're eating, because it takes frequent, consistent imbalances in your chemistry to produce those tiny holes and spots in your teeth. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people correct them. Let's say someone drinks a lot of alcohol for a couple of weeks, and then they decide that was a bad idea, or they drink a lot of soda for a couple of weeks, and they'll get little holes in their teeth, and then the holes will stop and they'll fill up. So when you have this changes in the teeth, the dentist can't tell when they see a tiny hole that hole has been there for 6 months or for 5 years. They don't know.
Right.
The only way a dentist can know is if you're seeing them regularly and that they have documentation, and then they can tell that there's been a significant change. So if you go to the dentist and just have little holes in your teeth and he pokes those holes and they're not sticky, sometimes they won't even poke the holes. They'll just take an x-ray and make a diagnosis from x-ray, which I teach people in the book, you know, what the dentist should be doing. They should be looking at two signs that there's a cavity. Mm-hmm. X-rays is one, and that cavity should be confirmed with a probing where they poke the tooth, and there should be, the cavity will be a soft and sticky spot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people have tooth pain and sensitivity that isn't directly a tooth cavity, and so this becomes really confusing because the dentist doesn't necessarily catch those, and the treatments they have for those are bad.
Wow. That's wild. We got to take a quick break, but we're with Ramil Nagel from CureToothDecay.com, and I highly suggest you picking up this book. I have it. It's really, really good. We'll be right back with Ramil Nagel after this break. Hey, what's up, everybody? I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Paleo Summit that's put together by our man, Sean Croxton. And this is a summit that took place live over 8 days, and I believe there's 23 video presentations, 23 audio files, 18 hours of cutting-edge information, and 300 pages of transcripts. Now, this program is really an amazing program if you're looking to make some permanent changes in your diet, and if you're tired of struggling with fat loss or weight loss, and you're struggling with food addictions, and you're just looking for a permanent solution, this is definitely something you want to check out. You can find it at extremehealthradio.com/paleosummit, and they talk about things like gluten sensitivities, how to curb food addictions and cut back on food cravings, how animal foods and things like cholesterol do not cause heart disease or degenerative diseases, and how to deal with things like bone loss and cancer and muscle pain, autoimmune diseases, and how to burn fat and all that kind of stuff. So if you're looking to change your diet once and for all, definitely check that out. It's extremehealthradio.com/paleosummit. All right, let's get back to this interview. Okay, we are with Ramil Nagel, author and owner of CureToothDecay.com. And Ramil, I wanted to ask you, going back a few minutes to the sugar question, you said that cavities typically form from kind of a consistent use or consistent elevation of sugar levels. Now, what kinds of sugar are you talking about? Is that, you know, would that include things like fruit as well?
Absolutely. The more refined the sugar, the more toxic it is to the body. Mm-hmm. So the worst sugar is high fructose corn syrup, and that doesn't necessarily cause blood sugar fluctuations, but it can cause liver damage and other blood fructose fluctuations. It just causes massive chaos in the body, mm-hmm. and that will alter the blood chemistry levels. Then, refined white sugar will cause big and prolonged fluctuations versus a very, let's say, modest sweet fruit or like a carrot or something mm-hmm. will have much less strong fluctuations, so less minerals will be pulled from the bones. And of course, it depends what else is in your diet as well. So someone could actually eat sugar, and if they had a high calcium diet, they might not have cavities.
Wow. So I've heard Dr. Bob Marshall, he was on our show recently, and one time I heard him talking about there's a level of phosphorus that once it gets to a certain level, now I'm probably completely butchering this, but the phosphorus level, when it gets to a certain point, always triggers cavities. Now, is that true, or am I stating that correctly?
That sounds about right.
Okay.
If the calcium and phosphorus get out of balance, then there'll either be tooth cavities or gum disease.
Okay.
Or if you have not enough. Now you ask, are people eating enough? Just by the U.S. government minimum intake standards, 30% of population doesn't get enough calcium.
Wow.
And the phosphorus is much higher. The thing is that they made the phosphorus standard really low. So I use Weston Price's indigenous vitamin nutrient analysis mm-hmm. to make an estimate of how much calcium and phosphorus people need to be healthy. And it does, that definitely depends on your genetics. If you're a big person, you're going to need a lot more calcium. If you grew up drinking dairy or having dairy products, you're going to need a lot more calcium. If you're from countries where you grew up with no dairy products and your ancestors didn't have dairy products, you're going to need a lot less calcium.
Right. Wow. There's so much to get to here in, as far as people's teeth. You know, I have to ask you about fluoride, and I can't let you go without, speaking about that. What are your thoughts on fluoride? I know you mention it extensively in your book, but for our listeners who haven't read your book, what are your thoughts on fluoride?
Well, there's two kinds of fluoride. There's fluoride they put in the water, and then there's fluoride they put on the teeth. The fluoride in the water, there's no evidence that that does anything at all to your teeth. I mean, it messes them up, but there's no evidence that it's going to stop cavities.
Right.
In a small percentage of people who are exposed to fluoridated water, they get fluoride dental damage, which is dental fluorosis, mm-hmm. and their teeth are damaged by the fluoride. There's many studies that show that it's poisonous. Dr. Dean Burke, there's an amazing, someone put this on YouTube, so it was amazing to actually see this. He was director of the National Cancer Institute or a researcher there, mm-hmm. and he studied cities in the United States where they had fluoride added, and then he looked at their cancer rate, and in every city you could correlate the cancer rate rising with the addition of fluoride. And this is, we're giving people cancer and promoting cancer with adding fluoride to the water. There's no doubt, very clear.
Wow. And it's also in the toothpaste as well. Is it in any other products?
It's in a lot of products. I think that's what Prozac is made out of.
Oh my gosh. Do you really think that, I've heard a lot of people talk about the fluoride thing and they say that, they're purposely trying to do this to us and things like that. Do you really think it's a nefarious thing that they're actively and consciously doing, if that is the case? Or do you think it's more a way to get rid of a toxic chemical that they know is toxic, but they have no way of getting rid of it?
It's hard to know what is going on. But we can just look at the facts that it's really poisonous mm-hmm. and it's wrong that it's being put in the water supply and it doesn't stop cavities.
Right.
And we know all those facts. And from that, you can make conclusions. Now, city councils, legislatures, they'll still vote to put fluoride in the water. Mm-hmm. They think it's good. So there's also a lot of ignorance. But yeah. Is there somebody there who, someone had a plan, absolutely, to put this stuff in our water. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been in there. And it wasn't an accidental plan. There's right. no way.
Right. So now I just wanted to ask you, on a personal level, do you go to the dentist often, or what's your kind of personal approach to going to the dentist and things like that?
Well, I have a Alpha Advanced Lightwire Functional Dental Appliance on the top and bottom to repair the damage. I just put out an article on this. The damage caused by conventional orthodontics uh-huh. is profound. How many faces people are getting messed up, how much stress is being put on people's, on children's bodies by braces that fight the natural growth patterns of the bodies. So that's why I have wow. this appliance. So I go to see a dentist every 3 weeks to get my appliance adjusted. But he doesn't poke around my teeth
yeah.
for cavities, because it's not his specialty, and it's nice to talk to him because he doesn't, his money is profit is from doing these dental appliances. He doesn't do any drilling at all, so you get really honest opinions from him. I occasionally would go for a teeth cleaning every couple of years. Otherwise, I don't see a dentist, because what's my point? What am I going to get
right.
from it? And this perspective kind of got affirmed when I met a dentist who's in charge of a very large health insurance program. Mm-hmm. He investigates the dental fraud, and he's been in the dental field for like 30 or 40 years, and he's taught at dental schools and everything. And this guy, he won't go to any dentist except for one that he trained.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's that bad.
Wow, and so he was like a biological dentist or something like that?
He's not a biological dentist. He's just a regular dentist, and he won't go.
Wow, that's crazy. Oh, my gosh. So back to what you were talking about before, the braces and containers and things like that in children's mouths, they're pretty damaging, aren't they?
They're very damaging. Not all of them, I'll say, but the conventional assembly line orthodontics, where the kid's teeth are crooked and they just slap on the wires on there and tighten the and force the teeth to come together, mm-hmm. that is really damaging. Same with the headgear.
And not to mention, you know, what those things are made of. What kind of low-quality, cheap metals are those things made from, too?
It's stainless steel, but, yeah, it probably has nickel in it. And yeah. and there is some low nickel light. I forget what it's called. The metals, it definitely affects people. I think the metals in the crowns and root canals are, or even just mercury fillings in children, are a lot more dangerous. But what they do is, so the jaw is expanding in all directions with the normal growth of the child.
Okay.
And if the child's jaw is not big enough, then they're going to put these braces on them and force the teeth into an unnatural position rather than expanding the jaw with a wire appliance.
Oh, okay. And that's what you have, is that right?
That's what I have now. And doing it as an adult, it's miserable and it takes forever.
Right.
Whereas doing it from when you give it to a child, I had braces when I was 8. If I had one of these appliances, it would have been magic. My whole life would have been different. Wouldn't have health imbalances.
Now, speaking of the width of the jaw and things like that, are we supposed to have more space between our teeth than we do?
It's not really more space between the teeth, although if children who have really good jaw development, that's the width of the jaw.
Mm-hmm.
There's the length. There's the front and back dimension. So how far the lower and upper bones that hold the teeth come forward.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the width, there's length, and there's height. There's three key dimensions in the jaw formation.
Okay.
And the more strong the diet is, the bigger the jaw, the bigger the jawbone, the mandible, and the more growth there is in the maxilla, the upper plate. Now, so when the child's getting their adult teeth, if they have full development, they'll have huge spaces between their teeth before the adult teeth comes in, because they have so much space.
Okay.
Now, an adult human is not supposed to have spaces between their teeth, but they're supposed to have enough room for their wisdom teeth.
I was going to ask you about that, because I've had all four of mine taken out, and I was going to ask you, it just seems so far from what we're supposed to be doing as a, you know, the way our level of health as a culture, the where we have to extract these wisdom teeth. I mean, it just, if you really think about it, it just seems crazy.
Yes, and even by the conventional dentist standards, I put a report on this out, a lot of wisdom teeth are removed unnecessarily, millions per year, and removed for the wrong medical reasons. And that doesn't take into consideration that you can expand and create more space in the jaw to keep the wisdom teeth, usually.
Right.
And yeah, it makes a huge difference, especially as we get older. We need those back sets of teeth to break our food down more.
Right.
So that our digestion is put more at ease.
I mean, it's you know, I think of it and I think, like, you know, here we are as a culture removing people's tonsils, removing people's appendixes, removing people's wisdom teeth. And, you know, these things aren't just, you know, throwaway organs that were put in our bodies. I mean, these are there for a reason. I mean, it just makes no sense to me, you know, to you know, without any real thought of alternative ways to deal with, you know, certain symptoms, just to remove these organs. It's in my opinion, and I think it's just ludicrous.
It is, and it's based on this concept of disease, where disease attacks the innocent victim, mm-hmm. and that the cure for disease is to remove the disease entity mm-hmm. from the person. So the tonsils or appendix or whatever is seen as this diseased part of a person that has to be removed, to, like, as if that part is bad and separate from the rest of the individual.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we've been talking about, obviously, you know, our tooth and oral care and stuff like that. But what I really want to bring home to our listeners is, you know, this connection that the teeth have to the entire body. And, you know, I know you talk about this in your book. You know, each tooth, I believe, is corresponds to different organs and meridian points and things like that. And the Chinese and the Germans have done lots of studies on that and you know, brought that to the light. But let's talk a little bit about why people should care. I mean, you know, I've got people in my life that I know that just don't really care about their teeth. And, you know, it's more than just, you know, having a nice white smile, right?
It's a good question why people care, because I think people don't care until they start getting too many drilling fillings at the dentist,
mm-hmm.
or their teeth start hurting and they don't know what to do about it. And until then, they just think everything is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to tell people why they should care, but I think of what I'm offering to people as preventative dentistry is far more caring than just getting synthetic materials put into their teeth,
right,
as a treatment.
Now,
I think it's up to the individual to want to take care of themselves.
Right. Now, what do you make of these things people get, like the Invisalign, or, you know, I know this is a kind of a different product, but it's those things they put on there to whiten their teeth and all of that stuff. What do you make of all that stuff?
So Invisalign is basically braces, but done with a plastic kind of retainer splint device. And some people I talked to said the case studies don't look good on the Invisalign.
Hmm.
A lot of those things, even braces, isn't necessarily bad if you have a good practitioner who understands where the body needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
So with Invisalign, you have to use it with real care, and you have to make sure the practitioner that you like what they're doing. And probably a lot of times it's done where people aren't the right candidates. I don't know how much it can move teeth. So it's kind of a thing just to be aware of, but it might benefit some people. I don't know. Or it cosmetically benefits them. The teeth whitening, the thing people don't know about teeth whitening is that it doesn't last. And the more you whiten your teeth, the more they need whitening.
Oh, really?
They kind of get a dull, it kind of like wears off, and then you kind of slingshot in the other direction.
Oh.
And of course, it's chemicals and very toxic to the tooth. You know, I kind of think of any chemical treatment in our mouth, it's like spraying pesticides in our garden. Like, it works. It'll kill the weeds or whatever and make things look nice, but you just poisoned everything.
Right.
So, yeah, it's poisoning the mouth, and it'd be interesting to look if there's a relationship between teeth whitening and tooth loss. So I recommend people not to be really careful with tooth whitening. And there is a kind of tooth whitening that's less bad that you can do at home or from dentists.
Mm-hmm.
I don't encourage people to do it. I forget what it's called. But if you go to a holistic dentist, they should probably have the less toxic tooth whitening.
Right.
There's no way to do it yet that I found that's non-toxic. A simple way to whiten teeth is just use a little baking soda and rub it on the tooth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I do. I brush with, you know, baking soda and salt and like that. So when we come back, I want to ask you about some things like root canals and mercury and things like that, some of the heavier issues that people are having with their teeth. So we'll be right back with Ramil Nagel.
Hi, this is Kate. Thanks so much for listening to the show. I want to tell you about a product I love called Yeast Infection No More. You can find it at extremehealthradio.com/yeast. If you're like me and you've ever had a yeast problem, candida overgrowth, you've had many of the following symptoms like digestive disorders, gas, bloating, skin rashes, allergies, migraines, always being tired, PMS, this is a great system that will teach you how to permanently cure your yeast infection, rebalance your body, boost your immune system, regaining back your life, basically. Successfully used by thousands of men and women worldwide. It's best-selling. It's instantly downloadable. 250 pages of jam-packed advice and instruction. It's backed by over 35,000 hours of intense research. It also is accompanied by a free private mail counseling for over 3 months if you buy the product. What is there not to love about it? Again, find it at extremehealthradio.com/yeast.
Okay, we are with Ramil Nagel, author of Cure Tooth Decay, and he runs a website called curetoothdecay.com, which I highly suggest you check out and also get his book. It's really, really an important book to have as reference and to read and to really understand and learn about the role of your teeth and your overall health. And it's really, really a great book. So check that out. Ramil, I wanted to ask you about root canals. I have one, and I actually got mine done before I knew anything about health and teeth down in Mexico because it was, you know, 90% cheaper. And God only knows what I have going on in that root canal. I have a plan to go to a biological dentist in Texas. Talk a little bit about root canals and why they're so dangerous for people.
Well, the biggest thing with root canals today is that most of them are not necessary. And they're not necessary by the conventional perspective of there's some inflammation and, you know, the tooth hurts, but the root canal wasn't meant for that kind of procedure. The root canal was designed as a life-saving procedure for that tooth. That tooth was going to need to be extracted. There was no other treatment left. And you do the root canal to save the tooth. That was the idea. Uh-huh. And that's not necessarily a bad idea. But now everything's a root canal, because it's one of the most profitable, or a crown, because those are the most profitable per hour procedures, not because people need them.
And they're extremely damaging, right? Because you're basically embalming a tooth that's trying to die. Is that what's going on?
The tooth isn't trying to die, even. Okay. If the tooth hurts, that means the nerve is inflamed. Sometimes people will get recommended root canals on teeth that don't even hurt, that there's an abscess in the gum, which may or may not even relate to that particular tooth. So when the nerve is inflamed, the theory goes that there's bacteria that's infected your teeth. Because the industry of dentistry has to have a theory to promote them doing these procedures that aren't necessarily what people want. And that theory is that there's these bacteria that invade your body that you can't get rid of them. And so the dentist has to come in and try to get rid of this bacteria causing your tooth to hurt, right, by their perspective. So they remove the inside of the tooth, they drill a hole in the top of the tooth, take out the guts of the tooth, the blood, the lymph, the bone-building cells, the nerve. They take that out, they sterilize it or try to sterilize it, and they fill it with a synthetic material such as gutta percha. Mm-hmm. And then they put a crown or cap that tooth or something on top of the tooth, and then you have a half-dead tooth in your mouth. Wow. And what happens is, the problem with the root canals is each tooth has 3 miles of microscopic tubes, and in those tubes there's nutrients, there's food, there's cells, and those that material in the tubes of the tooth, when you kill off the nerve, mm-hmm, can putrefy. And that putrefying material, it's like a rotten vegetables in your refrigerator.
Okay.
You can get rotten gunk in your teeth. And then if there's not a perfect seal on that inside of the gutta percha on the inside of the tooth, then that putrefied material can start leaking, and it goes right into your bloodstream, right to your heart. So there's all these thermographies where they can correlate breast cancer or maybe heart disease with a root canal tooth. Right.
Yeah, I've heard of that, and I think there's a Dr. Bob Dowling, I think, he says that just about all cancers have a you know, correlation to teeth, which is pretty fascinating. So if someone has a root canal, like I have one, what should we do? You know, what are some of the first steps we should, you know, think about considering as far as what to do with the root canal?
And that's where there's a lot of different opinions, but I recommend the minimal invasive perspective. So you can leave it. Now, almost all root canals are toxic. So the question is, are you okay with that toxic burden?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a significant illness or health problem that might be improved? If you don't have any significant health problems, then keeping the root canal is probably a good idea. And you can get them redone with a more, there's a BioCalyx is, or I think that's what it's called now. BioCalyx is a more organic material that they use for root canals.
Okay.
And dentists can seal it up. Some dentists recommend you could shoot the tooth with different lasers to stimulate it. You could put herbs around that tooth, kind of baby the tooth,
uh-huh.
keep an eye on it, and you could do the oil pulling
uh-huh.
and just take care of it, because people who get their teeth pulled, they don't like not having that tooth there. So having a biting surface is so important. You want to do what you can to keep the biting surface. But I wouldn't recommend just pulling a root canal unless there was a serious illness that you could verify was being contributed to by the root canal.
Now, what do you think about if you're getting more advanced in age and you're in your 60s, 70s, you know, at that time, the burden of toxins and, you know, bacteria versus your immune system, you know, your immune system slowly starts to diminish as you get older. And, you know, you may not have an issue with your immune system now if you're young in 20s and 30s, but if you keep that root canal in, will that be a burden, do you think, like more of a burden than your body can handle at 70 as opposed to when you're 30?
Well, Weston Price studied people who had root canals, and the root canals today are much more precise than in Weston Price's time. This is in like the teens or the 20s
okay.
that he studied the root canals, and he found 25% of root canals, he followed patients to their death, there was no observable symptoms. For 25% of the people.
Okay.
So some people, yes, they need to have them removed at some point.
Uh-huh.
And some people, they can handle it.
Yeah, because removing a tooth, I mean, it's a, you know, right now there's no real, I mean, I've heard they're working on being able to regrow a tooth from a, you know, pulp and things like that. But I mean, removing a tooth is a huge deal. It's, you know, once it's gone, it's basically gone.
That's correct.
And does it, so if you remove a tooth, let's say you have a root canal and you get it removed, I know there's options for, you know, what to put in place of it, but how does that affect the energy systems in the body and how your teeth correlate to organs? And does that screw up that kind of energy perspective on the body?
It definitely influences it. Now, having composites or having a filling or having a root canal does affect the meridian of the tooth.
Okay.
And it does affect the related organs. Pulling the tooth would also affect that meridian in a different way.
Uh-huh.
There's not an easy solution. It's like you have to choose from an array of not so good choices.
Right. And how much easier is it to just take care of your teeth? You know, preventative dentistry, like what you're teaching people.
Yeah, the best thing to do is to not get a root canal. And there's an exciting article I'm working on about how Weston Price recommended people not get root canals and say, hey, we don't need to be doing root canals anymore because we can prevent the problem. We shouldn't have to do any more root canals, so it's not going to be an issue.
Wow. So as far as your diet on a daily basis, what kinds of foods do you eat and what kinds, first of all, what are some of the top foods people should avoid, and then what are some of the top foods people should eat?
Packaged foods is a simple way to describe what people should avoid.
Okay.
It doesn't matter if they're organic or not. Most of them, it's the industrialization of the food that's made us sick. It's not necessarily the specific ingredient. It's not necessarily milk or wheat or...
What do you mean by the industrialization? Just the process?
Industrialization is when food went from home production to factory production.
Okay.
So when the dairy went from getting it from a farm in your neighborhood, when the cow's on grass, to being in a confinement cell and being fed all kinds of antibiotics and grains and other unnatural foods. For wheat, it's being ground up in these, you know, high-tech mills and preserved with different chemicals and who knows and how the bread is made. There's so many things that turn a food that used to be healthy into a food that's no longer healthy, grown with pesticides. So the whole store-bought whole grain products like crackers and breads are bad for teeth. Mm-hmm. Any concentrated sugar products are really bad for teeth, specifically synthetic sugar, you know, like high fructose corn syrup, agave, or any sweetener you've never heard of. Most people eat too much sugar, even if it's organic sugar or whatever.
Okay.
So sugar, what's the third bad thing? Nothing's really coming to mind. I would say just the packaged grain products when they're mixed with sugar. It's just almost anything with sugar that has sweetener added is going to be what's bad for your teeth.
Okay. And what about some foods that you think would really help people's teeth?
Well, raw dairy products, raw milk, kefir, cheese, raw grass-fed cheese from healthy animals. That's probably the number one food. Having butter, grass-fed butter, maybe like between a teaspoon and tablespoon a day is pretty good for people.
Okay.
And cauliflower oil, fermented cauliflower oil by Green Pastures, has the fat-soluble vitamins A and D. The number one thing anyone can do to reduce the rate of cavities immediately, at least 40%, is to have a teaspoon or more per day of fermented cauliflower oil. And a teaspoon is just an estimate. People have to pick a dosage that's accurate to their particular needs.
And maybe their size. And so what is that? It's from which website? Can you get that on?
You can get it from cauliflowerolshop.com. You can get it from greenpasture.org.
Okay. Now, is that the same thing as the high vitamin butter oil? Is that the same or different?
High vitamin butter oil is made by Green Pastures. It's a grass-fed butter that's supposed to be from the spring and summertime where they use grazing practices and give their cows cauliflower oil lick sticks. So the butter is really high on vitamin D, and there's what Weston Price called Activator X, a very... it's a substance that helps our body utilize the calcium and phosphorus.
Okay.
The Green Pastures butter oil is an excellent product. So they've sold out of it. There's none in stock right now. Hopefully they'll figure that out. But that stuff is amazing for making your teeth hard. You just take a little bit, they get hard right away.
Wow. And so, okay. So are those the main kind of foods that you're talking about? The raw butters and the cod liver oil, the raw milk, the cheese, the raw cheese from grass-fed animals. Are there any other supplements maybe or whole foods that you would recommend?
Let's say, many levels of what people can do to add to their diet to make their body healthy. A new insight I've had is to have a little bit of kelp powder, 1/8 of a teaspoon per day, approximately, and, you know, use it as you feel like you need it.
Uh-huh.
It's really good for balancing the glands in the body and for helping with the calcium and phosphorus balance.
Okay.
Broth from soup is really good.
Like a bone
chicken
broth.
Chicken bone broth. Okay. Fish stock is the best.
Oh, what is that? Fish stock?
Fish stock, yeah. If you make a broth from fish bones.
Oh, wow.
That's magic.
So that has more of the cartilage and things like that inside of it?
It doesn't have more of the cartilage. It just is, the sea is so rich in minerals, so seafoods are really good for minerals. The sort of cartilage gooey stuff, you can get that from beef or buffalo.
Okay.
All those things are good. I would say they're different. But the cartilage gooey stuff is really helpful for bones and joints.
Wow. So I know we're wrapping up here. We got a few more minutes. I didn't want to, you know, I want to make sure we cover this before we go too. It's just as far as the daily, you know, tooth care that, you know, you have something that you talk about which is called blotting, and that's to help get rid of bacteria. But, you know, right now I brush with baking soda, sea salt, and sometimes a little bit of hydrogen peroxide, like a drop of that. I forget what the percentage is, 30% or something. What do you think of that? And what are some ways that people, you know, take care of their teeth in a better fashion?
Well, in my book, I recommended, I gave people a couple options, including a homemade tooth powder formula, which is as simple as what you're using, sea salt and baking soda.
Okay.
That's good for most people, even just sea salt. I like to use herbal tooth powder, and there's the place I get it from is holisticdentalstore.com.
Okay.
And that's just what feels the best to me. I avoid the store-bought pastes and paste products mostly. And I personally, I've been playing around with baking soda. I don't think it's good to use too much because it's abrasive.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an alkalizing effect, which is fine, but it does rub down your enamel.
No, I do mine.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying that, like, I do mine, you know, I'll just put a little tiny, tiny bit in some warm water and swish around after I have, like, if I have a piece of fruit or something, to kind of change the alkalinity of the mouth. So is that a good way to use it without having the abrasiveness and maybe get some alkalinity? What do you think about that?
I think that could work. Yeah, and, you know, a little bit of abrasiveness is okay. Uh-huh. It's just toothpaste were originally made so people could clean the gunk off their teeth and polish them. It used to be like a dentifrice, like polishing a shoe or waxing your floor or something.
Okay.
That's what toothpaste was for. It wasn't for preventing cavities. So it's kind of like, think of that when you're cleaning your teeth, that something should be really mild and gentle for the teeth. So, yeah, if you don't use a lot of baking soda, that's very gentle. If you've been using baking soda and love it, keep using it. That's what works for you. Sea salt's really nice. Some people like to use soap. You know, it's not abrasive.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use the herbal stuff and because it's medicinal and has nutrients in it, but it's also not very abrasive.
Wow, there's just so much to get to. So where do you see your work heading? You know, are you working on some new things or writing some more books, or what direction are you headed in?
Well, there's the struggle of how to get the information out to more people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm selling a decent amount of books right now, but I would like to sell about double what I'm doing so I can help more people. I'm writing a book on how to cure gum disease. And then what I'm focusing on is traditional grain preparation. So I know a lot of people have become scared of grains and avoid them, but grains in some cultures were considered medicinal. So I want to make and actually manufacture and provide people medicinal grains where they can eat it and feel amazing and get some good nutrient-rich carbs in their diet.
Mm-hmm.
That our ancestors from different parts of the world have eaten for thousands of years. So that's an exciting project I'm working on. And it's just going to be, I think, paradigm shifting, because a lot of people have it wrong on grains. When they do prepare them, it's almost always incorrectly. So I'm going to clear the air on what's correct and what's healthy and provide people with food that they've never experienced before.
Yeah, it's amazing how quick, you know, there's the paleo side and then there's the raw food side, and, you know, we all demonize certain, you know, portions of food. And so that sounds interesting. So that's a book you're writing?
I don't know exactly what it's going to be. I'm writing articles, and I'm also going to get into the production and manufacturing of food.
Oh, wow.
But it'll be to high standards that people haven't been able to have in the store before or order online.
Oh, that'll be fun. That'll be great. Would you mind holding on as I close out the show?
Yeah, I'll stay on.
Okay, thank you, Ramil, for spending some time with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us today. I hope you're able to learn a lot of good information. There's so much we didn't even get into, and I could speak with Ramil for a long time. So hopefully we'll have him back on and he'll talk more about some of the issues that we didn't cover today. If you enjoyed the show, could you do me a favor and click the like button on this show page? It's extremehealthradio.com/22, and I would really appreciate that and getting the word out to more people. And we're also 100% listener supported, so if you feel like you'd like to donate, you can donate as little as a dollar, and we would appreciate anything you might consider giving. And also, don't forget to check out our store. We've got lots of great products in our store, like Ramil's book and other books like that. So visit our store for lots of really, really great products. And thank you so much.